welcome to Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith, the podcast about the triumphs and traumas of unrequited love. My guest today is a man. He is the overly talented comedy writer and actor who betrayed the UK by moving to the US and becoming even more successful there. And bizarrely, he's also the executive director of Wrexham AFC, but I can't imagine that coming up on this podcast. It's Humphrey Carr. I nearly forgot to say your name then. That would have been bad, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm sure people would have recognised me from the credits.
Actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
The bit that the fans know.
Sure.
The crushed heads. We all know each other from the forums.
Oh, do you? Okay, yeah. That's great. Also, I always think if you've clicked on this, you know who the guest is.
In an ideal world, but maybe it's auto-played.
Okay, they're binge-listening in hospital.
Yeah, the bugles ended in... Why are they in hospital? I hope they're
I imagine
right.
That's the only place.
The only place where... What, they can't reach... They can't reach the podcast to change it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Humphrey, crushes. Do you still get crushes?
Oh, gosh, yes.
You see, that is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because I sort of assume... Men, straight men particularly, would grow out of it?
Well, I mean, maybe I will at some stage, but I'd like to think I'm young at heart.
Oh, yes.
And as I said, I'm a fan of the show, so I've listened to some of your previous guests, and I've recognised in a lot of them similar traits that I have that I think everyone has, which is, you know, life's more fun when you have an endless supply of sort of different crushes. I think it was Lucy that was talking about she gets fixated on a particular chocolate bar and eats it endlessly and then gets bored of it.
Yeah.
I'm the same. I go through a phase where I'm like, well, this is right now it's Terry's chocolate oranges, which is not even a chocolate bar. That's chocolate meal.
Do you eat whole ones?
Yes. Not in one sitting, usually, but often the gap between the two sittings is just distressingly small. Yes. Yeah.
Do you know they used to do lemons and...
Really?
Yeah. And like initially they thought they were going to do a whole range
of citrus chocolate.
Yeah, extravaganza. And raspberry as well. Anyway,
ooh.
Terrible idea. No, the orange
yes,
one
the orange
works.
Superior.
But aside from chocolate,
yes.
Who would you say your biggest crush has been?
Now, to pull back the curtain for a second, you did mention to me earlier that I was going to have to pick my biggest crush, and that was quite a difficult task because I am a crusher.
Yeah.
I'm replete with crushes. But I
suppose, what's the one that comes to mind first when I say?
Leslie Easterbrook, a.k.a. Sergeant Callahan from the Police Academy movies.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So that's... Okay, so that's not probably Kim Cattrall, is it? No.
No.
She was Porky's.
Certainly not. Well, she was in Porky's, but she was also in Police Academy
1.
She
was,
But yeah, Sergeant Callahan was the...
Certainly not. Offended
by that. Absolutely not.
Idea.
Well, when you have the angel that is Leslie Easterbrook, a.k.a. Sergeant Callahan, there, you barely even notice any of the rest of the cast.
Yeah, I can't say I do.
Yeah, so she was... I'm burning up multiple questions here, which is probably one of my first time I was aware that... my initial crush with Leslie Easterbrook was like, I don't know why... I love that character. This is when I'm a small boy.
Okay,
like,
yeah, so gosh, how old are you at this point?
I think it was entirely pre-sexual initially. Yeah. I was probably 10.
Initially.
And I was like, well, yes, you. I mean, unfortunately, in a sort of slightly... You can say that she inadvertently was grooming me for when I did reach sexual maturity.
God.
She wasn't as absolutely. Let's, I don't want.
Yeah, there was no internet then.
I don't want
no
the headline: Wrexham AFC executive director accuses Leslie Easterbrook of grooming. Yes, I just thought she was the best. I loved her. I thought she was funny and cool, and she was good at karate, which was high on my list of things that it turned out I liked in characters and women. And then as I got older, I started to be like, oh, I wonder if it's also because she's got, she's very glamorous and sexy.
Yeah,
and they often had her coming out of a swimming pool.
Yeah. Did you, when you were watching Police Academy and you were seeing all of the other funny men, mainly men, because it's
men.
The 80s, were you sort of aware that there was something different about her? Did you just think, I like that one the best?
Yes.
Or were you aware that there was some other feeling going on?
Yeah, I think it was... Well, I loved all of them. We had those on VHS and I just watched
How
them
many
over.
Of them?
And, oh, I think the first five. And I used to watch four Citizens on Patrol over and over again.
Is that the best one?
Well, it was the best one to me, I think, not least of all because Leslie Easterbrook played a big role in it. And she used to, like, throw people around. There was, like, a sort of self-defense karate
I've never heard of
bit.
This woman. I'm so sorry.
That's quite all right.
Yeah,
I mean, Margaret,
it's weird.
She didn't stir anything in your young loins.
No.
And that's very understandable. But, yeah, I'm sure many of your listeners out there are, like, of course.
What's her name in
there?
What's it?
Sergeant Callahan.
Sergeant Callahan.
So she was very... she was kind of strict... And tough. I mean, there was setting up a pattern that runs through a lot of my crushes, which I like strong, powerful, self-possessed women, and that was right there, right
in
out
the
off the bat. In swimming pools, in gymnasia, busting
high
perps
kicking.
On the street. Yes, any of those places. If I see a woman bust a perp on the street, I am. My heart jumps into my mouth.
Okay. Did she do anything else?
She did. I think. I mean, this is where perhaps people poke holes in my theory that she's my biggest crush because she.
You've got no idea.
Beyond that, she kind of was in lots of kind of B movies and lots of bits and pieces. Yeah. She's still working today. Every now and then, I go and have a look on her IMDb.
How does that feel? Because I mean, we've spoken before about cameos on, on this program and how it's. It's a slightly sad thing for the person who does, you know, who is obsessed with this person. You get the old version, not the lady and the
right. Well, in many respects, like many first crushes, it was with the character was who I really crushed
yes.
on.
Yes,
you know, it's again not to delve too far back into the crushed back catalogue, but I think that's the thing that a lot of us find. It's like you crush on the character, and. You know, I'd be delighted to meet Leslie Easterbrook, but I don't think I would quite be like, oh gosh, I can't believe it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that. It wouldn't have the same effect on you.
But if Sergeant Callahan somehow is brought to life by some sort of piece of magic, I'd
I mean,
be very
stranger
excited.
Things have happened.
Stranger things have happened. We can but hope.
Yeah, so she could do a spin-off. I mean,
the Callahan mysteries.
How old is she now?
70 something, okay. I would think. Yeah, maybe even older. I mean, because you forget that, like, yes, those movies were a few years old when I was eight or whatever.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I, that's a good question.
I mean, yeah, so when we do the science at the end, I should probably do it for Sergeant Callahan. Does she have a first
name? Actually, that's a good point. Oh, what was Sergeant Callahan's name? It was one of those things where, like, again, it gives you a sense of the character. She was always Callahan. There was never a softness to it, you know, because she was in a position of authority over all, you know, she had worked her way up to be a sergeant.
Were there
in the police.
Any other women in the? Oh, there was a little tiny one.
Yes, there was Hooks.
Hooks.
Who is the squeaky voiced lady who, was part of the original intake in the first Police Academy film. And then kind of worked her way up to being a sergeant, a dispatch caller, I think, by Citizens on Patrol, which again is the one that I watched the most. And yeah, there was usually a lovely lady for Mahoney to mack on over the course of the episode, but they came and went.
A bit
heartbreaking. I just wish she found love.
Did you used to imagine being in the films with her?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think that was a big.
Were you
part
a
of it.
Small boy at Police Academy?
Yes, I think I was in that sort of liminal space where I was a small boy. In my mind, I was like, well, I'm a man. You know, I am both a man and also myself now. I mean, as I said, it was initially, it wasn't really a sexual thing. It was very much just like, God, these guys are so cool and funny and what a fun world to live in.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of, I mean, that's why I sort of wound up working in comedy and entertainment.
Rather
was that I always would rather
than
being
in
a policeman.
The police, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was
turns out not
like,
as fun.
Oh, I want to live in this fun world. Yes, yeah. Neither of those things nearly as fun as it seemed. Yeah.
Yes, so true. Just talking about, being in comedy. The worst thing about being in comedy is finding out what people are like in
really
comedy.
Really like. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, maybe even Leslie Easterbrook.
Well, this is the thing. Maybe never meet your heroes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I actually, speaking of one of your heroes / crushes, Hugh Laurie, I always remember seeing him in Burlington Arcade right before Christmas. And I started to walk towards him to be like, oh my God, I love you. And thank you so much. And you've inspired me to go into comedy and all that kind of stuff. And just at the last second, I was like, I have no idea how this is going to go, and I'm not going to take the chance that he's going to be like, I'm just trying to do my Christmas shopping, please leave me alone.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sort of swerved past him at the last second.
I completely have that with Hugh Laurie. There are a few heroes that I've met, and it's never been massively disappointing, but I think what's weird about it is that the dynamic just immediately shifts.
Yes.
You know, and then, so either you meet them and it's just clearly you are a trembling wreck and they are a slightly irritated but nice hero.
Yes.
Or your colleagues and suddenly they're a bit more just.
Right,
there's a level.
Yeah, you're on a parity. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like me coming in here to your successful podcast.
It really is.
You know, for me,
me coming
into
Wrexham.
Exactly. When you're in my territory.
I have been auditioning for Wrexham.
Yes, to play in midfield.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll see.
It is auditioning. It's called auditioning, right?
That works. We understand what you mean. The thing is, Margaret, you need to get your numbers up because you're only running about 9 kilometres a game. And we need you to go up to 11 and a half.
I'm in the stands. There are people in my way.
I know, it's very difficult for you. I do see. But yeah, the data doesn't lie, I'm afraid. my next, probably actually now, this is going to be the pattern for the rest of the podcast. I'm going to go like, actually, this person's my biggest crush ever.
I get it. I mean, that is how crushes work in a way.
Yes. But I there's no question, and actually it works in reverse, because my wife always loved British comedy and loved British people and like had a crush on British people. So when I came along, it was, you know, we just fit together.
Yeah.
Like gin and tonic. But yes, I realise now that Leslie Easterbrook was a gateway drug to Jennifer Aniston.
Okay, yeah.
Which, when I was
in
school...
I mean, I have heard of her.
You've heard of her. Yes, okay, that might be better. We can cut out all the Leslie Easterbrook stuff. She won't mind. She's not going to hear it. But the... Friends was so formative for me. It made me a huge Americanophile. It made me love American comedy. It made me interested in American comedy, mm-hmm. American culture. And I just thought it was the funniest thing of all time. I thought she was the funniest thing of all time.
Yeah.
And I thought she was cute as a button. So,
well, the other thing about that is that the plot line very much is written for people with crushes.
Big dorks. Yeah, for big jumbo dweebs.
Swap
dinosaurs
crushes.
For tanks, and I am basically Ross Geller. So, yes. And I was like, I'm inept at talking to women. I'm obsessive about things that no one cares about.
Yeah.
That's me.
People pretend to be asleep when you start talking.
All the time. All the time. Yes. So, that's so funny that I thought before I came, I was like, oh, I want to think about this. And Leslie Easterbrook definitely was the first person I was like, God, why do I like that person so much?
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, I was like, oh, I that's part of the reason. And then Rachel Green, it was like absolute. I crushed so hard.
And
on
do
her
you
from
think it's Rachel Green rather than Jennifer Aniston? Well, I mean, obviously, you don't know Jennifer Aniston.
I've been in the same room as her.
Have you?
At which point, my wife gripped my wrist with such iron intensity because I was sort of joking about, like, what if I just rush over there? And she was like, will you just
rush
behave?
Her.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, how close do you think I can get
down
before I get tasered? She had a lot of burly men sort of circling her.
I mean, yeah, I assume everywhere she goes, she has different types of men circling her. I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying, that the burly men are protecting her.
Yes, and there's an outer ring of creeps like me that I have to work my way through.
Negotiate through.
Yes. But yes, so that made a huge, you know, I always wanted to go to America. I always sort of dreamt of, much as I dreamt of living inside Police Academy, I dreamt of living inside Friends.
Yeah.
And that involved some very elaborate fantasies where I was like, yeah,
oh
I mean,
my God,
I mean,
how when did you get there?
When Helen Baxendale got into it, I mean, I was consumed with jealousy.
Yeah.
Even though I was, I think, 18-year-old.
I was going to say, she must have been...
public school boy. Like, what if there's a character?
I could have played that.
This could be a really interesting character where, like, maybe she's got a brother.
Well, no, she does have an ex-boyfriend who
Yes, who played him?
Up. Yeah, lost to...
Lost in the Mists of Time.
And probably...
but I could have butchered
American.
That role.
You could have done, yeah. He was a rugby playing...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, God, I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
I think you still would have been way too young.
I would have been way too young. I mean, it just what possible storyline they could have conjured up for Helen Baxendale's brother's character, played by me. I don't know. possibly, you know, getting arrested in Times Square.
But you were thinking actor wise rather than
yeah. I was by that stage. I was like, well, fun enough at that stage, I was going to join the army. So, but it was
that
again part
not
of the
a good
fantasy.
Way to get
was
into Friends.
Not a good way. Well, again, I mean,
oh, and invade. You mean?
Yeah. Well, no, I think I thought you know maybe. You know, maybe Jennifer Aniston will be driving through Sandhurst on the day of my passing out parade. She'll see me in uniform and be like, oh, I'm giving up Brad Pitt or whoever she was with at the time. That dweeb over there will do. But yes, that it really set the seed in a way to make me go, like, oh, maybe I would like to be an actor. Maybe I would like to go to America and maybe I'd like to go and like do this job.
I mean, I'd say doing this podcast, it has started to make me think that like basically everybody is like everyone's lives are just led by these crushes.
No question.
Like just little weird. You know, there's the Seinfeld routine where he talks about men just doing things to impress women, and that's why he went to the moon. You know, he's got no idea. Is this gonna impress you? Am I gonna get?
Yes, I firmly subscribe to that view.
Yeah,
and I have done for a long time. Like almost every major decision I've taken in my life has been along the lines of like, do I think babes will be into it? You know, I mean, you know, it's There's no question that's a huge...
And the army was one of the...
Well, yeah.
I suppose babes are into the army, aren't they?
Lots of babes, lots of certain types of babes are into the army. Babes that kind of...
Into the army. I don't know what that phrase is.
Well, you know, are into soldiers and officers and men in uniform.
Do you know there's a uniform dating...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. By the way, I quite like a lady in uniform as well.
Yeah.
As evidenced by Sergeant Callahan.
Yeah, yeah.
Look great in her blues.
How... I'm always interested in how much, what constitutes a uniform, though. Is it people in, like, ladies in tabards, you know, cleaning ladies? Does that count?
Well, it depends. If you can pull off a tabard, you can pull off.
You can pull off. They're notoriously easy to pull off.
This is true. Yeah, easy access. And that's always pretty hot.
Yeah.
Yes, there's definitely a thing where, like, I am, as I say, drawn to strong women and strong kind of authority position holding mm-hmm. women. That's a big thing for me.
Authority position holding women.
Yes, women in positions of authority is probably a better.
We'll
sentence.
Cut that.
You know, so yeah, like I think if I see a cute police woman, it adds 20% to the like ooh
traffic wardens.
She's pretty. Maybe. Maybe.
We have to go down all the way to...
Well, yes. I mean, again, if you can twirl that ticket machine with panache, then then everyone's
I don't think they have ticket
possible.
Machines these days.
They not well, have a little thing they print out, yeah, stick the
yeah,
sticker
yeah,
on?
Yeah, some, yeah. So did you ever... like? So this is talking a lot about the fantasy element.
Yes.
Did you ever do anything active? I mean, apart from move to America once you were... whatever age you were.
Are you asking have I had sex, Mike? Because I actually
really
have.
I'm really not.
I actually have.
I'm asking... So I wrote 10 letters to Hugh Laurie within the space of a year.
Right,
for example. Did you ever do anything active like that?
Hmm.
Or even did you make... collages, which is
well, yeah. My room
really
at school
loved.
Was covered in. I had a whole wall that was like sort of Jennifer Aniston wall, and I would scour magazines and sort of Radio Times and things like that, and stick up pictures.
I noticed one. So I found a picture that of my Tim Wheeler shrine from university, which is very really too late.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that. I mean, the only thing I was actually embarrassed about was a little speech bubble that I'd added. To one of the
what
pictures.
Did it say?
Oh, I can't. Oh, it said, "I am a love god," and I don't. I mean, I don't know what I was.
Well,
I
you were trying to get inside his head and thinking of what he would say.
Tim Wheeler probably wakes up every morning and thinks, "I'm a love god.
I'm a ruddy love god."
I always really liked Tim Wheeler when they used to ask him, because he was the lead singer of Ash.
Yes.
When he used to get asked. What would you be doing if you weren't in music, which, you know, people asked a lot. And he was really young. I think he's only a little bit younger than me. And obviously most people would say, I'd be in prison or I'd be dead. And what he said was, I'd be studying business studies. I can't remember which university it was he'd nearly got into. I sort of did love that. Sensible, handsome pop star.
I was wondering whether it was the same as the famous Peter Crouch quote of what would you be if you weren't a footballer? A virgin.
A virgin, yeah. No, that is good. But to be honest, it's a little bit witty.
I know, it's a bit too witty for you.
Yeah.
You like the mundanity.
I like the really thinking.
The common sense.
What would I be? Well,
yes.
I got an A. And he did his A-levels like when he was on tour. And I mean, he's just
a
very...
Oh, wow, he really was very young.
Yeah.
Sure, they were from Northern Ireland, weren't they, Ash?
Yeah, and then I had to sort of stop that crush because I went out... My first boyfriend was a boy from Northern Ireland who
I see.
Looked a bit like Tim Wheeler, and I was like, I can't sort of keep this
his name
up.
Is Tom Walker. It's just getting closer and closer.
Yeah, I just don't want to think that he's just a...
Yeah, it's...
dupe.
Yes, I mean, I think... But, you know, Tim Wheeler's very attainable crush. I was foolish because I kept crushing on people who are on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And that pattern continued into my like first actual real life person that I met that I had a crush on.
Was American?
Well, actually, she was English.
Nearby. Oh, okay.
She was English, but she was from the Bahamas. So it's that like slightly weird, but like I said, posh people who live in the Bahamas type thing. So she went to school over here, but I met her in Florida on a family holiday, and that was the first person in real life who I was like, oh my god. You make me feel like what Leslie Easterbrook and Jennifer Aniston do. And that was a very exciting moment.
Yeah, so was she in your circle or was it from
She was
afar?
So we met it was a thing whereby we went and stayed in this kind of like It's weird. I can't think of a better way to describe it than a golf resort, but none of us played golf. But it was just like had these nice houses which had like pools, and there was a big golf course, and there was like a beach bit you could go to. And that's where she lived. That was where her family lived.
Oh, there.
So we basically went on a holiday there like 3 years in a row. And each year, my jumbo crush on her got bigger and bigger and bigger. And each year I singularly failed to do anything about it.
Right, so you didn't do anything about it. Was she actually attainable? Like, when you think about it now,
yes.
How old was she?
So she was maybe a year older than me, I think. So she was like, I was probably 14 the first year we went there,
yeah.
And 16 the last time we went. So she was 17 by the end of it.
Okay.
And she
was
kind
of perfect.
100% attainable. A fact that I knew because it had been communicated to me that she was like not interested in me.
Oh my God, are you
and
serious?
I still was too much of a coward to do anything about it. There are a couple of different families who all went.
This is actually really annoying me already.
I know, sorry. annoyed me.
Yeah.
Because I pined for her the rest of the time that we were, I mean, literally for months, she was all I would think about until we were next going back there. But there were. As I say, it was a few sets of families, like friends of my parents and their kids, who were kind of, a lot of them were a little bit older than me. And my single biggest fear in the entire universe was any form of humiliation
sure.
whatsoever. And the prospect of shooting my shot and being shot down and that being common
yeah.
knowledge amongst the group was, I was
yeah,
like,
so
I will
mortifying.
Burst into flames.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
As a result, I was like, this has got to be the dead certest of dead certs.
And there was no way of finding out. I mean, listen, I was at this. I got together with my first boyfriend. It took me so long to get together with my first boyfriend, and I basically had that reassurance.
Yes.
I had somebody, you know, a mutual friend say, this is 100%.
Yes.
He really likes you. This is, you know, this is
yeah.
going to happen, sort of thing. So I do understand, but wasn't there a way of getting that?
Margaret, there was that. There wasn't,
oh,
it wasn't even a question of
God.
A way of getting it. Like, it was made as abundantly clear to me as it sort of possibly could be. And I just was like, I mean, I don't think I'd ever kissed anyone at that stage.
Yeah.
So I was like, how do you even do, like, what if I do it wrong?
Yeah, I suppose the fear is that it's a dead cert, and if you manage to mess up the dead cert, like, right at the very last second, then how do you ever get
this will be a humiliating
yeah.
crumble. Oh, God, you know, and it just, when I think back to it, there's almost no memory of that which comes back, which is positive. other than the sensation of, like, as I say, it was exciting to be like, oh, wow. Because prior to that, you know, I was definitely getting into that age where, like, Baywatch was on telly. I definitely was starting to be like, oh, I understand. I should like to interact with this person in a
mm-hmm.
way.
Rescue them in the sea.
I'd like them to, or them rescue me. More,
yeah.
more strong women
Even
in uniform.
Better. Well, this is my point.
Mm-hmm.
This is my point. This is what I'm thinking about in my head. That's
yeah.
what I mean by my point. I do think it's funny having the sort of heterosexual male point of view here because I do think that there is that sad thing that you were the one that had to do something about it. Because there's part of me that thinks, well, she was a year older. If she liked you, why wasn't she making a move on you?
Margaret, such a good point.
Yeah,
let's get her on the phone. I think I've got her phone number somewhere.
Because it was a sort of a weird, a frustrating thing. And, you know,
yes.
to be a woman
well,
in
that's
that
a very
situation.
British thing as well.
Right, okay.
So in America, like, when I moved to America, I was suddenly like, oh, my goodness, this is amazing for slightly awkward fellas like me. Because there, if people like you, they tell you. They literally march up to you and like,
yeah.
hi, I like you. Or like, do you want to take
yeah.
me out? Or are you going to take my number?
Yeah.
All that stuff. It was, it blew my mind. And I
yeah.
loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But this girl, she was Bahamian.
She was English to all intents and purposes.
Posh.
She was posh.
Yeah.
We transcend borders, Margaret. This is the thing that, this is what Brexit's all about.
I will never understand, yeah.
You know, that posh people, we can just go, we have the same EU rights.
Yeah, yeah, I get it,
yeah,
I
yeah.
get it.
Yes, it's all been agreed. It was...
So she was, but she was, so posh equals awkward as well. Although maybe...
No, she wasn't. She was one of the coolest. She was so
no,
cool,
but
calm
when
and collected.
It comes to, but why wasn't she actively pursuing you?
Well, I think for her, she was like, I don't think, I had a crush on her.
Yeah.
I think she was like, yeah, I'll snog this guy.
Right.
He's all right, you know.
So it's not
but,
like
but
it
I don't think
an
it was
equal pat.
No,
yeah,
I don't think there was parity. And that okay. was a big pattern through a lot of my subsequent crushes, was that I would go all in on people who were just like, oh, hey. Hi,
oh,
Hugh.
And that's, I mean, and you're right. That is the immediate death knell of just being overly
yes.
obsessed with someone because it's not attractive. No,
and I have never been very good at playing it cool.
Every time that I met the first boy that I loved,
sweet Margaret.
Oh, the date and the—I mean, pathetic. I found out years later my little sister had been reading my diary, and she now remembers things that
she'd
I don't.
Been passing from, intel to the enemy.
For
a price, yes.
And she really saw it like an amazing story. But the truth is that, like, I don't think I ever told him quite that.
Yeah.
But it's when it, I think he was interested when I finally did.
I well
say
believe it,
something.
Margaret. I well believe it.
Thanks. But not enough. but also, if he starts to dawn on you that I'd been pining, you know. For,
oh, sure.
It's just like. You start to feel a bit nervous about it.
Well, at a certain point, you pass a sort of threshold at which early obsession is charming. Like as in, you know, when you have found someone who you guys are dating for a long time, or you're married, or whatever it may be, you know, to go back and be like, oh, and then I was all worried about this, and then I remember seeing you, you know, you know, the kind of. My wife, I would always talk about, like, she loves that I followed her on Twitter before we ever met. Like, she always rubs that in my face slightly. And I saw her at a Paley Centre sort of a night for Community, which is a TV show that she worked on, about 2 or 3 years before I met her, and was like, oh, that's Megan Gans. She's amazing. And so, yes, then subsequently I'd be like, yes, I saw you and I followed you on Twitter. And she quite likes it.
Did she notice that you'd followed her? Like, so she had...
No, God, no. I was a worm. I was nothing. She didn't know who I was. But then, yeah, subsequently after we had been on our first date, she then went onto Twitter and found that I was already following her. And she was like, all pleased with herself. Yeah.
But so that crush, I mean, you know, you don't have to talk about your marriage if you don't want to.
It's boring because it's a crush that worked out. I mean, in a way, I feel like this is a show for talking about crushes that don't work.
Sure, yeah. But just quickly, is it? Do you think that it worked because it wasn't a crazy, you know, stalking, sitting in a hedge crush?
Yeah, it was actually the thing, and I've said this before to many people, but never on record. But I, at the stage at which I met Megan, the last thing in the world I had planned was to fall in love with someone. Mm-hmm. I'd just come out of quite a long-term relationship. I just moved to LA. I was 30 and I was single, and I was like, well, you know, that now might be a time to, like, just see what's out there, like, really try and enjoy myself. And the first date I went on, I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to marry this person.
I was in a good place,
I think. And it was just, yes, the stars aligned, which I think is so often the case when you do find someone that you really like. You know, we often talk about, we worked out that she had been studying in London when I'd been living here. And we were like, oh, what if we'd met then? Like, it just wouldn't have been the right time. It wouldn't have worked out. We'd have, you know, maybe we'd have dated, but we probably would have fallen out and then, or not fallen out, but fallen out of love or stopped dating. And then, you know, if we'd run into each other 10 years later, it would have been like, there's all this baggage and there's all this, that, and the other. Yeah. So, yeah, time.
When I got together with my husband, my dad basically, it was basically implied that it's because I had food poisoning and he was grieving. But that's worked out for
whatever
us.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, whatever it takes. Yeah. We're in a weakened state.
Sure, but then you skip past various barriers and various little things that people put up, and you just cut to the very core.
Yeah. Okay. No,
helps.
You're right. It is boring to talk about these lovely stories.
It's more fun talking about the
shame.
Times you like really, biffed it.
What's
real hard.
Yeah. Go on. What's the worst? The worst result of shame.
My problem was, as I alluded to earlier, I would aim so high above my station in life.
I love this.
In terms of the like the real people that I would meet, that I would like be like, I'm going to pursue this person. And I definitely had, like, back to back all through university, and then for about 2 years after university, there was a girl I was at university with who was like comfortably widely acknowledged to be not just the most beautiful person in our year, but probably in the last 10 years of the University of Edinburgh's history. Sort of lecturers would be like, well, of course, it's a huge privilege for you all to be here at the same time as Jessica, because she
just
has
to look at
just to share the room, you know, that is enough. And a reminder that grace walks amongst men.
That is, please don't tell me a lecturer said that.
No, he didn't really. But yes, you know, I and every other
overconfident,
and even underconfident. I mean, just every. I was a universal crush was held for this girl, and funny enough, I I followed the path of like, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna be make her laugh, I'm gonna be fun, mm-hmm. you know, I'm gonna be, and I, she was great fun. Genuinely, she was a lovely person, and I've stayed friends with her and lots of like that gang.
Yeah, and you're showing off about it, aren't you?
Yeah. And yeah, I'm basically just coming on the podcast to be like, I am friends with someone who's really beautiful. just friends, unfortunately. but yeah, funny enough, there was another fella who was fulfilling a very similar role, and yeah. I remember so clearly being like, what a chump, and not realising that I was looking directly into a mirror, and just being like, what's he playing at? Thinks he's going to like make her laugh and like fall in love with him? Like, no way. You've got to be, you know, like ladies like directness and honesty and bravery and courage, and I displayed none of those qualities, no. And just was like, I'm fun. I'm a fun clown. Like, you want to date me, right?
I can't remember whether I've mentioned it before, but Dan's impression of me flirting is, well, it's going oh bob 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 and doing a sort of waddly dance, throwing a peanut up in the air and catching it in my mouth.
I mean,
was it? Yeah, is that ringing any bells?
It was. I mean, I don't know that I said pop, 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 but I
bob, bob. Can I say I don't say bob?
Can
bob,
I just
bob.
Be absolutely clear that there was no bob bobbing for me? But yes, peanuts. Sure. No, and I mean, I remember that reaching a sort of zenith where I finally plucked up the courage to kind of ask her out, and her being so sweet and nice about it. In retrospect, they're absolutely clear that this is a person who is looking to do everything they can to protect your feelings.
Yeah.
And me being like, I think it worked. I think we're going out. I think we're going out now. And I like skipped home from the nightclub we've been in. And like literally, you know, was like, how do I recreate a sort of John Hughes movie moment? Should I put on some kind of music and like dance around the kitchen? Because it's like, happiness is finally here for me. And then that creeping realization over the following week, as I was like, so like, what do you think about like Friday night? And her being like, oh no, rats, I've
got
to go to the archaeology exhibition.
What did she say that she thought was a rejection? Well, and you thought was acceptable?
No, I think what it was is that I had sort of said, hey, we should like let's do something just the two of us this weekend kind of thing, which was sufficiently ambiguous for her to be like, oh yeah, sounds great, you know. Yeah. I'd love to. And we, as I say, we
sort
were
of a
good
trick.
Friends sort of. Yes, I mean, that's the thing. I sort of perhaps subconsciously knew, well, I don't want to be too explicit here, otherwise she'll send you packing. But I want to be just explicit enough that I can try and bind her into some sort of contract.
I mean, I had a friend who, a guy sent her a text saying, do you like independent cinema? And she was showing me this and going, I don't want to go out with this man, but I do like
independent cinema.
So what am I supposed to
I don't
to
want to
say?
Betray all those small chains. Yeah. I don't want to get banned from the picture house.
I mean, yeah, because the way to do it is just to say, nope.
Yes. You know? Well, the thing that I learned eventually, but not until I was a bit older, was that, you know, being direct, being clear, ultimately is the most successful thing. Because
rip that plaster
people
off.
Will either be like, no, and you can be like, fair enough. Yeah. Takes all sorts. best of luck with the rest of the season. That was one, and oh gosh.
How did that end? Like, how, as in,
that
when
ended
did
is
you
like,
realise this isn't, she's
well,
gonna...
shortly thereafter,
okay.
At that point, I was like, God damn. And I kind of, I was just doing all that thing of like talking to her friends, being like, what do you think? Do you think this is real? You know, and I definitely sustained that far longer in the post.
Oh God! Yeah.
You know, I didn't realise that while I had survived the explosion, the radiation had already killed me. But I was like, well, maybe, no, I'm all right. I think if I take pop a few of these iodine tablets, I'll be fine. That race was well run at that stage. But we stayed friends, and I still every now and then
still
bump into her. And
still trying it on.
Yeah, every now and then I'm like, I throw it all away. I'll move back to the UK. I'll kill my wife. No, I don't.
I had I remember talking to a friend, again, way too late for this nonsense, mid-20s maybe, and he said, the thing is, Margaret, all of your stories are just like, and then he gave me a really weird look, and then he went home. What do you think that means? It's just like, so pathetic. It's like, you know, I gave myself the excuse because I was the woman.
Yes.
I gave myself the excuse to not approach and not... I did learn to do it eventually and got shot down numerous times.
Shed load of dick.
Like literally no one has ever said yes when I've asked them out.
Margaret.
I know.
I can't believe it. So did Dan ask you out?
You're right. He asked me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of people have, two people have asked me out. I mean, it really does sound like I just married the first
one. You penned him. You got him. You got him. He got stuck in there.
He was
turning around. He couldn't see an exit.
Yep.
You'd done that thing where you kind of felt.
Kettled.
You'd curled in the entrance. So he came through the entrance. And on the way out, it's a narrower gap, like a fish in a fish trap.
Yeah.
That you've done that. Yeah. So that ended kind of like that. And then I almost immediately switched my fixation to someone equally as unattainable, who I then sort of, you know.
Did anything happen with the other guy, the guy in the mirror?
No.
So he didn't get any. That would
no,
have been
he also fell into
galling.
Purgatory with okay. me. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Did she get together with some sort of jock?
Well, so yes. So this is the other thing. It was the classic nice guy dilemma. And I'm doing inverted commas here because it's that.
No, I can hear them in your voice. Don't worry.
Okay,
don't
great. Thank you. I wasn't sure if the audience knew. Sure. But the. You know, that thing where you're like, I don't know what she sees in that guy. Like, he sucks. And, like, I'm so nice. And, like, she, you know, it's that kind of gateway drug for, like, incel, creepy nonsense.
Horrendous. Yeah.
Which I think, I would say that lots of nice, good, decent people, you go through that kind of, you're in that antechamber to being terrible. There's a giant door which you can go through, which is like, oh, well, understand that not everyone has to like you, and that's fine.
Yeah. And things aren't fair.
And things aren't fair. Yeah. And you know, and he is very good at rugby, so there is that. And you know, you go through that door, and then there's a tiny little portal you can force yourself through to become a terrible person.
Yeah.
So yeah, she always was dating, like, yes, incredibly handsome, capable, quite stupid sort of sports people. And then, And then I actually haven't met the fella she married, but she married this, like, absolute Adonis.
I mean, you're not that good
and had
friends
these beautiful
then,
children.
You didn't go to the...
No, I didn't. I didn't crack the invite. I think probably in the back of her mind, she's like, is he gonna stand up and bellow something from the back of the room? It's every chance. Yeah, me and the other fella, they were like, oh, we've arranged. Actually, it's so funny. You've won a cruise to Rio de Janeiro. So
I do like the idea of a wedding where, when that moment happens, all of the men in the congregation stands up.
60 men.
Someone's
just people passing their babies to their wives. Hello?
Any last chance?
Yes.
No?
Yeah, yeah. So that, yes, that was. That
so
yeah,
so
that
you
one.
So no, so you switched to this new.
I switched to a new unobtainable babe. Who again, I was great friends with. That was always my pattern, which again is a disastrous pattern, which is that you meet someone. I was often very suspicious as a younger man of very attractive people because they're usually incredibly boring because they never had to be interesting.
Never had to develop a
And I would genuinely groan. When I was like 18, going to 18th birthday parties and 21st birthday parties, people would always, I would have one of two things would happen. They would either say, oh, great news, you got my cousin Ophelia. She's, and this sort of ethereally beautiful person would appear. Well, you're sitting next to her.
Oh, I see. That's not horrible.
Oh, again, yes, I should say. It's sort of very Illuminati business. Yeah, I had to kill and consume her. That's what happens at these parties. Yeah. Yes. Yes, you're sitting next to my cousin Ophelia and some very beautiful person would appear and I'd be like, oh no, this is going to be a really long evening.
Yeah.
Because they will never ask me any questions or you know, it would just be like, it'll be up to me to entertain them. And at
peanuts.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and normally I'd be like, so, what's your favourite tank of the Second World War? and why? You're not getting away that easily. And for some reason that would not produce anything.
So
or
weird.
I would get like maiden aunts because I didn't drink, so they would often be like, you're going to sit next to this quite difficult relative and make polite conversation with them. So those are my two options. But yes, if I met someone who's beautiful and fun and funny,
I mean that's killer combination. To be fair.
Yes. And you know, I would waste hours sort of walking along the Thames, being like, just imagine like. All the wonderful things we could do and be together.
Yeah. So you had it sort of sounds similar to my technique as well. So the technique of pursuing these people was just sort of hanging around, being
just
entertaining.
Being like, I'll just be there. I'll just be there.
And if I'm there enough, then maybe everyone else will have touched the truck, basically.
Well,
everyone else falls away.
I definitely read like a sort of Vanity Fair article with Kirsten Dunst right after the first Spider-Man movie came out, where she was like, my number one thing in a man is like a good sense of humour. Mm-hmm. And that piece of advice lodged itself in my spine.
So is this why you're funny?
Well, I think it's
Kirsten
it's
Dunst.
Part of it. I mean, not specifically Dunstall, although I do love Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it was like, well, my so it may be, let's get out the bloody Sigmund Freud chair here.
Sure.
My dad is like sort of his most distinct personality trait is that he makes jokes, he's funny, he messes around. And I can't to this day understand how he ever managed to get together with my mum. And so I think maybe on a sort of DNA level, I was like, huh, interesting. Well, no, but she's, I mean, he's sort of, he's a great big fat fella, and she's quite sort of willowy and glamorous. And
but presumably she finds him funny.
I think she did at one stage, yes. We've been married for 55 years or something
that wears
now.
Off. So bad news it does for all of us.
Yes, I know, you've got to be careful. But yes, I think there was definitely a part of me that was like, I think being as tall as I am, I'm 6'7", and I was a gigantic teenager, that, you know, you suddenly were like, oh God, everyone's looking at me all the time. And by that stage, I had grown up just watching Leslie Easterbrook being funny, you know, in a thing. And then, you know, all my crushes were quite sort of comedy centric in a way.
Yeah.
And it just was like, that's my jam. And I was like, that's what I've got. I don't have... I'm not very sporty. I'm not very clever. I don't have any of the other sort of traditional. I'm not very rich. I don't have any of the sort of traditional characteristics that my very simple mind at that age was like. What do women like? They like rugby. They like not football. It's so annoying. It's what I played. They like rugby. They like
these rich specific
people.
Women that you.
Yes, of course. Well, this is the thing. And again, that's
didn't
the pool
know what rugby
of
was.
The pool of people that I was meeting at that stage were all posh women. So that was the other thing. When I got into comedy, I blew my mind because I suddenly met so many more people, and I met so many more particularly women that sort of valued their own agency. I mean, this is a terrible thing to say, but weren't so many of the people that I met through school and university, it was like they were being told all the time, the best thing you can achieve in life is marrying an army officer and get two black Labradors and live in a house in Hampshire. And I didn't want that life at all. And I sort of found there was a bit of a disconnect between me and them. And then got into comedy and met all these people. I was like, oh, wow, all these people are so exciting and fun.
Yeah.
So a million more crushes would develop at that stage.
Does that era of crushes slightly, you know, it changes once?
That was the sort of golden age for me in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's not crushes or you're having safer crushes or?
I think it just, I started to be like, oh, this is a world in which, like, what I value most in myself is something that's valued by other people, which is a nice thing.
It's lovely, yeah.
To be like, oh, I like making jokes. I like messing around. I like being curious and open-minded and all that kind of stuff. And that wasn't necessarily what the sort of the great crushes of yore were interested in.
Yeah. Well, ideally, I mean, part of the thing about... I was sent a quote the other day about how crushes are really about finding... it's saying, I find the gap between us attractive. I don't know
right.
you. Right. But I'm sort of... It's the bits that you get to fill in.
Yeah.
That is...
the mystique.
The sort of fantasy version. I can impose quite... I've made up quite a lot of stuff about you.
A 1,000%.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You possibly don't have as much of an interest in sort of ancient Roman military tactics as I have projected onto you. But for now, I don't know.
And for now, you might as well have you saying all of that dialogue.
Yes.
And actually, particularly as a writer, there's a really nice John Finnemore sketch where he saying that the only really good romantic gesture proposal scenes are ones that have been written by someone where both sides have been written by one person.
Right.
Because in reality, you do these big... And I've talked to guys particularly who've said to me, I'm going to make a move on my best female friend. I've decided now's the time. And I'm like, oh, be careful. And then it's not gone to plan. But weirdly, twice I've spoken to people who said, no, I've really thought about it. I've really gone through and thought about it. And then it hasn't gone to plan because you don't know what the other person's going to say or think or feel.
Oh, 1,000%.
So it's sort of much nicer to keep it as a thing in your head.
Yes, and it remains pristine. You know, it you don't have that. I mean,
you can finesse it as well.
Yes.
You know?
The person who I crushed on after Jessica at university, I fully, like, lunged and got a, oh God, oh no, and like hands up in front of the face and like a full like, ah, what's happening?
Oh my God, really?
Oh yes, and I said I love you at that stage, which was an act of pure desperation because I loved the idea of her. I didn't love her. Like that was you know, a sort of mad, just desperately crushing experience.
That's so. But that was funny.
Like, I've laid all my plans. We're going to go to the cinema.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what the film was, and I think all the way through I was like, oh,
I'm just going to get
through this, and then.
But you're right, saying I love you. It's really interesting, that thing of it. It's almost going, I just want to get past all of the getting to know you.
Yes.
Maybe if I say I love you, it'll just make it all.
Or maybe
happen.
If I say I love you right after you've like basically sort of stiff-armed me into the street because I tried to kiss you, this'll set the seal on this thing.
Women love that.
Yes. If you're in two minds about, maybe you don't think I'm serious enough about this crush.
Although actually, yeah, maybe it's a way of, like, if you're saying it while being rejected, maybe it's a way of getting them to feel sorry.
Well, I mean,
go, look, I'm doing this because of my massive,
like, you
feeling.
You must forgive me. I can't.
Yeah.
I sort of thought maybe I'd be like a sort of Cyrano de Bergerac type figure and be like, my love for you is so good. I'm going to go and join the French Foreign Legion if you don't kiss me. And she quite rightly was like, well, I like you too, buddy. have a good one. And then we walked off in different directions. So, yes, I had sort of that thing of, you know, if there's that imbalance where one of you is thinking, oh, it's romance, you know, like this is, I'm gonna this is my chance, I'm gonna secure this thing, and the other person's like, I'm going to see the day after tomorrow at the cinema, it's very rarely going to work out well.
Yeah, it is really, but it's nice because you literally said how crushing it was and then laughed, so I'm presuming you're recovered from it.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Because again, I think like a lot of those things, I was in love with the idea of her, and I was in love with a thing that wasn't really there.
Like her tank knowledge.
We had her not actually real tank knowledge. And I was kind of, and also again, I think there's a kind of an ugly side to it, which is I was with both her and Jess before. I was in love with the prospect of. Here, look at me, I'm dating this incredibly beautiful person. And actually subsequently, you know, the more meaningful relationships I went on to have with people were not based on that in any way, shape or form. But it was
not based on those photos where you're pointing at someone in it.
Yeah.
Yes, sort of the idea, oh my God, I'm gonna
have this crazy
woman. Look at this.
Yes.
Look at this.
Yes.
Yeah, which isn't probably not the best place to to start.
I don't think so.
So we mainly talk to comedy women on this podcast, or have done thus far. You're our first, I was going to say straight man, but that's very insulting in the comedy world, is it?
First.
Isn't it? You're not a straight man.
No, I'm
in
a,
any
I'm
way.
A, I'm you're a character. The, I'm tough.
You're a character. But we've talked a lot about how finding women funny, or no, about finding men funny can then lead to them being attractive.
Right.
And so it's not necessarily the hottest. I mean, and in comedy, the men really don't tend to be
some
the
real
hottest
yes.
specimens. Have you, I mean, with all due respect, more than due respect to Debbie Callahan,
yes.
for that is her name, and Rachel Green, they're incredibly hot. Was there
hot
ever,
characters.
Yeah, was there ever, well, I mean, you talk about going into comedy and finding these women with agency.
I definitely found, like, it's one of those funny things where all my female friends who are comedians have lamented for a long time that being funny on stage is not a quality that men seem to appreciate.
You don't get groupies.
Yeah, so. and I, it's not, you know, much as I would like to speak on behalf of women comics, I don't suppose it's really my place. Not entirely. I've always found it incredibly attractive. I mean, I think it's a quality, like being, you know, being anyone who's funny, I'm drawn to, you know, and I think we've all got those friends and relationships where we kind of, there are people who we probably cut more slack than we would because they make us laugh so much.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of who, like, early crushes. I mean, I do remember when I first was doing the Edinburgh Festival, seeing Jo Caulfield and being like, who's that? Like, she's really funny and like, this is very exciting and interesting. I mean, as a kid, I didn't see that much female stand-up
no,
on TV.
It's Victoria
there wasn't
Wood,
that
basically.
Much that was on. Exactly, it was Victoria Wood. And, you know, you had Jo Brand and kind of those folks. But I feel like this is very please cut this if this is a too controversial thing to say. I think that the British TV industry in that stage for female stand-ups, they wanted them to have a kind of a semi-masculine quality almost. Mm. It felt like in order to be part of the gang then at that stage, you had to be a little bit grotesque. It was a little bit like, get a load of, like, isn't this crazy? This woman is trying to do stand-up?
Well, Jo Brand used to call herself the sea monster, like that was her billing on things as well, and it was an acknowledgement that this is what I look like is such a big deal that I have been forced into
this other direction,
rejecting myself as a
and one of the great things about sort of our lifetime of working is that you've seen that massive change. There are now so many more
attractive women
on TV, and that's great for me. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Yes, thank you. As I say, that period when I got into kind of working in comedy, I was just so excited. Like every time I go to a gig, I fancy someone else. Basically.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was thinking about that whole, female comics and female pop stars as well, not getting groupies in the same way that the men did. But actually, to be fair, the comedy men tended to be a lot more... lots of comics get together, like comedy men do show themselves to be attracted to funny.
I mean, for me, it's just like that is the quality that I value almost most highly in anyone.
To a fault, probably.
Yes.
Same as me.
I think there's like, please don't be a dickhead is number one. And then number two, please be funny. And then everything else sort of brings up the rear.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my wife, I immediately, like one of the things, she ticked all the boxes that I've talked about today, which is she's a strong woman, position of authority, who makes me laugh and isn't a dickhead.
Has she got a tabard?
She doesn't have a tabard.
A Wrexham AFC tabard. You're missing a trick.
Yes, she's got lots of Wrexham wear, but but we don't tend to, that doesn't tend to be worn other than on a match day. it sort of, I mean, that was, as I say, with Meg, I'd followed her on Twitter for a while beforehand because I loved her writing, I loved her work, and I enjoyed what she would put on Twitter when she used to go on Twitter at all. She just made me laugh. Like, and on our very first date, she tolerated me talking about tanks, which I
didn't
talk about. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Well, because we only in the context of we talked about what we'd done at university, and I said I'd done history and that my dissertation had been about American Army combined arms tactics in World War II. And she's like, "What on earth? What is that?" And I was like, "Tanks, tanks, airplanes, and infantry." And then she, because she's great, she's like, "Oh boy, all right, go on then. What tanks do you like?" And I was like, "Oh my god!"
But actually, to be fair, I think that anyone talking about what they're truly passionate about is attractive. Anyway,
1,000%. Being well passionate enough about something, caring about something.
Yeah. It was funny. I was asked recently if I'd ever lied to a partner about anything in order to woo them or whatever, and I was like, I mean, I did pretend to like Escape from Colditz more than I did. I mean, I played Escape from Colditz when I was a kid.
You were aware of
I
what
didn't
it was.
Enjoy it, yeah.
No, sure,
yeah, exactly. I mean, I've admitted.
And
that
was this
now
before or after Pop 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 Peanut?
That was part of it.
And then you and then strike
I like
a tableau.
Escape from like Colditz.
Yeah. And he was just like, whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa. Yeah.
Yeah. Steam came out
Let
of his ears.
Let me out of here.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Right, we're doing the maths, and we are going to do it for Leslie Easterbrook.
Yes,
sort of
great.
Respect to the actress, because it was the actress as well, as the character.
I've listened to every episode of the show, and I still don't really understand how the system works.
Oh,
so I'm excited
have you watched
watch
the
it.
Video? There's a video.
Yeah, I did watch the video.
You still didn't understand. I mean, I found out my sister doesn't understand it. As well.
Yeah.
I think
at that moment I understood it, but I've not retained the knowledge.
Okay.
So this is all I'm saying is this is exciting me. It's
okay,
like watching
to
magic
find
trick
out.
Close.
Yeah. Okay, there are two L's, two O's, no V's. E, you've got two.
She's got a few.
Yeah.
God, this is a long one.
Oh my god, it's getting longer. This is bad. No, it's coming down. It is coming down. Oh, it's really high. It's 87%.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm so pleased. No one will ever check these, so
yes,
I may have
great.
Done it wrong.
Yeah.
But 87%.
I mean, 87%, that's
she
crazy.
Might be near to
She might be 87 years old at this
point.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
You're not going to kill your wife.
Well, let's not rule anything out.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it'd be awful if when this comes out, it turns out.
That I have killed my wife.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, awful, but also the start of another great podcast series.
Absolutely.
Where you
no such thing as bad publicity.
There's no such thing as bad content, you know? If you can spin this into another, you know, 10-part serial type thing where it's like the podcast killer, he told us he was going to do it.
He was going to do it and then he did it. Thank you very much.
Also, you might clear my name.
Humphrey Carr.
Thank you, Margaret.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn-Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn-Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe as it helps people find where we are.